thank you everyone for coming today, for just coming straight after work, for leaving your deadlines to come and honour the courageous reporting of our colleagues in Gaza. So the London Freelance Branch Committee called this event before the August 25th atrocity, in which Israeli forces targeted and killed five more of our journalist colleagues in what's called a double-tap airstrike on Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The journalists were mown down as they reported live on air. The first strike on Nasser Hospital, they were killed alongside rescue workers responding to the first tap. All these civilians went to work to do their duty as journalists and health workers, and this brazen war crime arrived on all of our screens, one that even President Trump said he could not look at. The five journalist colleagues killed on August 25th that followed fast on Israel's assassinations on August 10th of Al Jazeera's Anas al-Sharif and his four colleagues. Today, we will say their names and honour the courage of all the journalists murdered in this genocide. To murder a journalist covering a conflict is a war crime. We're living in an obscene and disgusting time when it has become the norm to bomb hospitals, to slaughter and starve civilians, to torture and imprison doctors because they save lives and bring hope to the people of Gaza. In the Nasser hospital strike on August 25th, the names of the slaughtered journalists, it is our duty to uphold and honour, are Hassam Al-Masri, who was a photographer working for the Reuters news agency, Mohammed Salama, a photojournalist working for Al Jazeera, Mariam Aboudeika, a freelance journalist working for Associated Press, an independent Arab, Mo'az Abu Taha, a freelance journalist working for NBC News, Ahmed Abu Aziz, a freelance journalist working for Middle East Eye. As chair of the London Freelance Branch of the NUJ, I must particularly honour the courage of Mariam Aboudeika, who, as many journalists are, was also a mother. And as many mothers who are journalists often do, work as freelance. She was described in the AP press release as a freelance killed after her colleagues were named. So now I want us all to say aloud the name Mariam Aboudeika and reflect on the mighty courage that it must take to report independently in a genocide. Please take a deep breath in and let us together say her name. Mariam Aboudeika, we honour you. Thank you, everyone. Of course, we welcome the statement by the UK Foreign Secretary that civilians, healthcare workers and journalists must be protected. However, in the light of these atrocities, we need the UK government to do whatever it takes to bring about an immediate ceasefire and an end to this genocide. This further horrifying atrocity adds urgency to the questions we asked of Keir Starmer in the letter we delivered to 10 Downing Street today at 4 p.m. London Freelance Branch of the National Union of Journalists welcome Keir Starmer's statement on the 11th of August, in which the Prime Minister said he was gravely concerned by the killing on August 10 of six journalists by the State of Israel, and his call for an independent investigation. Back on the 31st of July, Irene Khan, the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression, expressed deep concern that without any evidence to back its claims, the Israeli army has repeatedly accused al-Sharif and other Palestinian journalists of being terrorists or supporters of Hamas. Her fears for al-Sharif's safety were borne out with the Israeli army explicitly announcing that it had targeted Anas al-Sharif. London Freelance Branch represents 3,000 freelance journalists within the membership of the National Union, and we wish to reinforce the call by the NUJ General Secretary, Laura Davison, that the Israeli military openly admitting to these atrocities brings into sharp focus the need for international action to end this impunity. We once again reiterate our call for the UK government, who claim to be permitted to press freedom, to exert serious pressure, to protect journalists, uphold international law, and support an investigation by the International Criminal Court into the blatant targeting of journalists and media workers by Israeli forces. There must be immediate international action to end this obscene behaviour.
Hello everyone, it's good to see you. My name is Senator Meisner. I'm a broadcaster and journalist. I worked at BBC News for many years and am now probably best known for being dismissed by the commercial radio station LBC following my robust interview with an Israeli spokesperson. That was April 2024. Over a year on, we now know that an array of journalists at mainstream organisations have been dismissed, disciplined, lost income and opportunities for accurately reporting Israel's assault on Gaza. However, none of us have paid the ultimate price, losing our lives. Since 7th October 2023, Israel has killed an unprecedented number of Palestinian journalists. Many of them have been smeared by Israel and its supporters. Those false claims have been endlessly repeated by so-called prestige news outlets across TV, radio, newspapers, and websites, with little or no pushback or caveat, thereby giving credence to Israeli propaganda. That includes unsubstantiated claims against Gaza journalist Anas al-Sharif, who was part of a Reuters Pulitzer Prize-winning team. He had documented in gut-wrenching detail the relentless destruction of his homeland, day in and day out, over 21 months. Anas was a whole household name to the Al Jazeera audience. The Committee to Protect Journalists and UN Rapporteur had warned that he was in acute danger a month before he was killed. Governments and leading news organizations said and did absolutely nothing. On the 10th of August, he was assassinated. Israel did not shy away from its actions. Instead, it accused Anas of being a terrorist without providing any credible evidence. It also failed to explain why it killed four of his colleagues, wiping out an entire Al Jazeera news team in one attack. Instead, Israel continued to threaten journalists. I recently interviewed the investigative reporter, Anthony Lowenstein. He's reported on Israel's occupation of Gaza and the West Bank for many years now. Anthony describes Palestinian journalists as, and I quote, some of the most heroic individuals on the planet. They have to navigate both Israeli attacks and threats and Western contempt for their craft. Then, last weekend, we saw Israel attack the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. They killed 20 people. As journalists and first responders rushed to do their jobs, they too were killed. All five journalists worked for leading international media brands, including Reuters, AP, Al Jazeera, and Middle East Eye. They were freelancers. Mariam Dagher, Ahmed Abu Aziz, Moaz Abu Taha, and contractors, Hussam al-Masiri and Hatem Khalem. The method used to annihilate them was the so-called double tap strike. Foreign correspondent Secunda Kamani described a double tap as a method used by terrorist organizations, including ISIS.
It should never be the preserve of democracies and self-styled moral armies. How do we know all of this? The answer, ironically, is that Israel's killing was broadcast live on an Arabic TV channel by Palestinian media workers. Back here in the UK, the next day, only 2 out of 12 national newspapers carried a front page photograph of at least one of the dead Palestinian journalists. The BBC's flagship radio news programme Today, where I once proudly worked, did not mention the killings in its headlines. The story was relegated to a footnote in a programme that is 3 hours long. I ask you, had Russia killed 5 journalists and emergency workers live on television, would the bulk of the British media have ignored or sidebarred it? The answer, I believe, is no. So what's the reason for the silence? You can draw your own conclusions. But Anthony Lowenstein puts it like this. What we are witnessing is, quote, Western racism and dehumanization toward Arab reporters who don't work for corporate media in London or New York. I, for my part, agree with him, because we have at least 2 years' worth of evidence. Palestinian journalists are the eyes and ears of the world. Without their work, the war crimes perpetrated by Israel would have gone undocumented. That's not just an opinion. It's the conclusion of every single credible international humanitarian law specialist, former diplomat, and aid worker that I've spoken to. When Hamas broke multiple laws of war on October the 7th, international news crews were permitted to enter Israel to report it, and rightly so. Yet almost 2 years on, not a single foreign reporting team has been allowed into Gaza unaccompanied to support Palestinian colleagues who carried the burden of detailing months of death, destruction, and famine. The UK government has, thus far, done little to address repeated calls to help protect Palestinian media workers. Instead, it has left to us, the NUJ's London Freelance Chapel, to speak up for our colleagues in Gaza and wherever journalists are at risk in the world, be it at home or abroad. Be in no doubt, the death of Palestinian journalists is not just the story of individuals. It is the death of journalism. If Israel is not held to account for breaching the protections afforded to journalists in Gaza under international law, the international community is giving the green light to every country around the world that we can be killed with impunity simply for doing our jobs. Photographer Valerie Zink, a freelance swimmer, Reuters cut her press pass into pieces after Israel assassinated Anas al-Sharif. She said she could no longer conceive of wearing it with anything but deep shame after Reuters repeated baseless accusations leveled at him by his killers. She wrote, "I don't know what it means to honor the courage and sacrifice of journalists in Gaza, the bravest and best to ever live. But going forward, I will direct whatever contributions I have to offer with that front of mind." It is advice that many of us could take. I end with this appeal. If you are a journalist and you have not yet spoken up for Palestinian media workers in Gaza who have been targeted and killed by Israeli forces while relying on their testimony, contacts, video footage and sound as the bedrock of your understanding, analysis, and reporting, then the time to speak up is right now. Please do not hide behind a misunderstanding of impartiality. Look at the evidence. And if you don't or won't, then shame on you. Thank you and well done to all of you for being here today. And thank you for listening.
we are also going to hear from Ahmed Anouk. Do we have Ahmed here yet? Ahmed, for those who don't know, is the co-founder of We Are Not Numbers, an incredible Palestinian creative organization. And he is now a proud member of the National Union of Journalists Digital Media Branch. So we have Ahmed. So Ahmed.
Thank you, my friends. While we are standing here, and this is a protest in the nice, amazing street here in London, I would like you to close your eyes and imagine for a moment. Imagine for a moment that a foreign country came to invade Britain, your beloved country, that they came here to destroy your buildings, to kill your people, to commit a genocide, to destroy your hospitals, your schools, your churches, to kill your children, to commit a massacre, a genocide. Imagine for a moment that a foreign country came here to do that. And then this foreign country deemed you a journalist, as terrorists, as danger, as a threat. What would you do? What would you do if a foreign country came here to kill your colleagues? It's a sad reality. It's a horrible reality. But I want you to know that this is actually happening now in Gaza. That it is happening to the Palestinians in Gaza. That the Palestinians are being killed in hundreds of thousands. That hundreds of journalists have been killed now. And Israel is killing more and more journalists every day. Why does Israel kill our journalists? Because they can. Why does Israel kill our journalists? Because they know that they can get away with it. Why do they do that? Because they know that the truth is their enemy. That the truth in Palestine is Israel's enemy. And unfortunately, Israel is going to continue killing the Palestinians. They continue to kill the Palestinian journalists because no one is standing up to stop them. But I have bad news for Israel. I have bad news for Netanyahu. The bad news for him is that the Palestinian journalists are not going to be silenced. That the Palestinian journalists are going to continue speaking up. They'll continue reporting. They will continue reporting. Despite all the odds, despite all the risks, despite all the threats, the Palestinian journalists are going to live and continue. Despite all of that, the Palestinian journalists will live and continue. And despite all of that, we will honor the Palestinian journalists. We will say their names. We will repeat their stories. We will share them with the world. The Palestinian journalists who were killed will not be forgotten. We will not forget them. We will not allow their stories to be silenced. We here in the West and in the East, we will raise their voices. We will raise their pictures. We will celebrate their lives forever. And more Palestinian journalists will speak up. And more Palestinian journalists will speak up. And more Western journalists will join us in our protests. They will join us. You will join us in immortalizing the Palestinian stories. We will not go anywhere. The Palestinians will not go anywhere. And we will continue. We will continue to report the news. And the Palestinian journalists, they know. They know that reporting the news from Gaza has become a risk. The Palestinian journalists are writing their wells. They know that they could be targeted. They know that they could be killed. But they're risking their lives so that you, so that you know the truth. So please do not forgive them. Please do not forgive those who killed them. Please do not forgive the Palestinian journalists. And finally, I would like to read to you the will of Maryam Abu Dakka, the journalist that Israel killed a few days ago. Before she died, she wrote her will to her child, Ghaith, and she said, Ghaith, heart of soul of your mother, I want you to pray for me and not to cry over me so that I can remain happy. I want you to always make me proud, to work hard, excel, and be capable. I want you to become successful, my beloved. My dear, I hope that you will never forget me. Everything I have done was only to make you happy, to keep you joyful and comfortable, and to provide everything for you. And when you grow up, get married, and have a daughter, name her Maryam after me. You are my love, my heart, my support, my soul, and my son, who I am proud of. I will always be happy hearing of your good reputation. I ask of you one thing, Ghaith, your prayer, my dear, your mother, Maryam. That was the will of Maryam Abu Dakka. Thank you.
I'm Dan Ashman. I do Life is Sacred vigils, and I'm here to join the vigil of journalists that have been killed in Gaza because they've been targeted deliberately by the Israeli forces.
We've heard that actually there's more journalists being killed here than all the major wars for the last 200 years.
Well, that shows that it's a policy, doesn't it? It shows that there's a deliberate attempt to stem and create fear to stop people telling the truth about what's going on.
Well, one of the reasons that this is allowed to carry on is because British companies are making money from the genocide. And I know you went to visit the Financial Conduct Authority last week because they're supposed to oversee this. Obviously, it's completely criminal to be funding a genocide, to be trading with a genocidal country like Israel.
Yeah, and what they're saying is that they need the Treasury, the MOD and the Foreign Office to provide a list of complicit companies so that they can sanction them. But they do still hold within their regulatory power a capacity to protect their shareholders from ill-gotten gains and criminal proceedings. So there still exists frameworks within their organisation to do things independently of the government.
What about, have they, because you wrote to them, have they responded?
I got a response saying that they will look into the matter, and then I phoned them yesterday to follow up on it, and then all of a sudden they didn't have enough information about me, and it was a different case number because they'd been swapped it over to someone else, and it became a computer says no situation. So what I would do is that I've revised the letter. I've got a template which actually uses just their terminology, just their regulations to forward to it. So I do need people to actually put that forward to them and probably take up that mantle a bit more, because I think they're going to avoid me now. So,
who's next on your list, or is that secret?
It's not secret. The next on my list is the Treasury, because they're meant to provide a list and get a list of sanctions. There's an office which is the sanction aspect of that department. So
this is things like, I mean, Russia, I guess, and Iran.
Yes. So they're very effective against Russia, especially Iran as well. But those where they're considered allies, they are aiding and abetting genocide. It's that simple. And that's against international law, that's against the Geneva Convention, it's against the desires and the designs of the population as well. No one really wants to be the contributing to genocide. I think that's probably one of the strong storylines which we've all kind of come out with from our conditioned culture, is that actually those things are atrocious and we don't stand for those things. But obviously the Crown does at the moment.
Well, you've told me before you were involved in years ago in Occupy in the city, because the city is this sort of bizarre jurisdiction outside, you know, even the King has got to ask permission when he goes into the City of London. It's where during the Civil War the plots were hatched to kill the King, for example, so that's maybe why they want to keep the royal family out. But what do you think, when you were doing the Occupy occupations back in the day, you ever thought that the financial institutions would be so corrupt that they would be consciously funding a genocide like this?
To me, it's not a huge surprise, if I'm honest. The Crown and the organisations, the businesses, have often made their fortunes through pillaging, through war, and through the obfuscation of language, this kind of game of politeness, but which goes on within it, just not mentioning it, not alluding to it. I'm not massively surprised. We had the Iraq War, didn't we? We've got some to date issues which have still not had any redress or remedy.
Well, look, we've got all the journalists here. Do you think they're on the case or not?
I think there are a lot of journalists that are on the case. I think that it's not a highly monetized arena, but I do think that people will gravitate towards truth. I think that that's what's happening. That's why they're losing the propaganda war, Israel are, and the mainstream media. And it's what, and rightly so, they should be outed, and they should be. We should create and generate our own, which is reflective of the truth.
So how do people find and follow you?
Well, you can get me on Twitter, and Daniel_Ashman. I'm on there, or Dan Ashman on Facebook. I'm yet to build the other platforms because I'm not massively digitally inclined, but I will endeavour to do that too. So there are things in the pipeline which need to be created in order to make it more accessible, I guess.
Okay, well, analogue Dan Ashman outside Downing Street, opposite Downing Street, at the journalist vigil. To support the Gaza journalists who are being massacred, what we've been calling genocide. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Blessings.
Phil Sutcliffe. I'm a member of London Freelance Branch Committee of the NUJ, and I'm just here to support the vigil for the obviously just cause that it is.
Why are the Israelis, do you think, specifically targeting journalists? It's pretty obvious they are.
Well, I suppose with any power that targets journalists, as does happen periodically all over the world, it's just to kill the news, to kill reporting of events. It must be. What else can you think? That's what it's about. They've blocked out, of course, journalists from all other nations. And so they feel this appalling need to annihilate the Palestinian journalists as well.
I mean, there's several hundred people here. Many of them are journalists opposite Downing Street. Do you think this will make any difference?
I don't have many political principles, but one of them goes, we do what we can. Just that, we do what we can. This is what we can do.
So can you see an end to the journalists, killing of journalists? Can you see an end to the conflict? Do you think the UN might do anything or whatever?
I not only do I not have any powers of prediction, I don't really have any opinions on that. Who the hell can tell? I don't know. I don't know, Tony, not at all.
Are there any, do you think, news outlets that have been doing a really good job that people should be aware of?
Oh, the ones I think are doing a pretty good job, people already are aware of. I don't consume a wide range of media, but at least in recent months, the ones I do consume, which are The Guardian and the BBC on the whole. The BBC is enormous and its coverage is very diverse. But on the whole, I think they do a good job on the whole. Just on the whole, that's all. Nothing's perfect, and obviously they're not perfect, but they're really working at it now.
My name is Ben Thompson. I'm a freelance journalist of many years standing, but I have a very easy life compared to the people that are doing the great work in Gaza.
So do you think events like this really can change anything? We've had a letter from the NUJ delivered to Downing Street. We've got several hundred people here saying stop killing journalists. Can it change?
I don't think that will make any difference instantly, obviously, but I think it's very important for people who feel betrayed by their professional organisations, which I think any self-respecting journalist would do in this situation, to be able to actually make their individual statement to make up for the backup that these people should have been given by their employers.
Do you see, analysing what's going on in Gaza, any kind of end to this?
Well, it's not... I don't think we individuals have the power to envision that, but all you can do is honour the sacrifices of the people who are at the sharp end.
And there's Helen... and I'm just here because I'm a journalist, and to know that so other many journalists have been killed. Obviously, the whole atrocity in what's happening in Gaza is beyond belief, really. Shockingly, it's true.
I mean, it's one of the things that's been said repeatedly today is journalists are being deliberately targeted, that we've had more journalists killed in this conflict than in actually both world wars. So why?
Well, I think the evidence is there, isn't it? I mean, that they are trying to tell the truth, no doubt, and get stories out, and the authorities and the IDF and Netanyahu don't want the truth to be out there about the extent of the carnage.
And do you think events like this, we've got several hundred people here, a letter delivered to Downing Street, can it make a difference?
Well, we hope so, but who knows? I mean, I think you can't just stand back and do nothing, really.
And what about any end to the conflict? Can you see any end, if using your analytical capability?
I wish I could, but others are better placed than me.
My name's Owen Holdaway. I'm a freelance journalist specialising mostly in the Middle East, and basically I think that the situation now has become so extreme with the level of death, particularly of freelance journalists and local journalists in Gaza, that I think that there really has to be much more of an out call of what's going on. And I think, like, the notion also of this both-sidedism, that basically that this is just the normal operation, is just not it's completely unfathomable now. The level of killing that the IDF have done towards journalists is just crazy. I mean, I think we're up to like 200-250 killed, and I think that kind of says something, that there's likely a new targeting of journalists, specifically their profession, for trying to suppress the news within what's coming out of Gaza. I mean, I think as well that it's very important now for the journalist community, and particularly the voices in the West that obviously have a much more stronger voice globally, generally, to really kind of in solidarity, and because this what the rules of operations are very, very, very much changed, I think, with this situation. Because basically, if you have one side which are actively suppressing and trying to kill you, you know, then you can't expect to have this equal impartiality. Our subservience, really, as a journalist, is most primarily to tell truth to power, and I think it's really incumbent upon all journalists now to really stand in solidarity to what is going on and what is being attacked as our profession in Gaza.
So we've got several hundred people here, most of them journalists, and we've got a letter delivered to Downing Street. Will it change anything? Can it make a difference even?
I mean, the optimistic side of me says yes. I mean, I always go to the sort of Martin Luther King thing, you know, the moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. And I do think that, like, you know, whatever is this consistent campaign, although it may not initially seem like interchanging anything, I mean, being the fact that there was a double attack on the hospital that killed journalists just yesterday, You know, and it doesn't really seem to be changing Israeli policy. I do think that, like, this consistentness, and it really is, I think, as well, like, incumbent upon the government, but also the rest of our journalist community to really come together and unite and put pressure on, because this is not new, this is not normal. These attacks are not normal, and they've consistently, you know, I mean, when they attacked the Al Jazeera team, they said they attacked a press tent. You know what I mean? So these are not normal rules of engagement.
What about your colleagues? If you're working here in London, it's a massive centre nationally and internationally for English language news.
Yeah, I mean, I think very much so. I mean, I started out at the BBC, and I've got a lot of respect for that organisation. You know, I think it really did start, but it needs to show a lot more, I think, courage at this point towards it, like editorial courage and not timidity in this, because this issue has really, like, very much changed. We're all one big family, and although we have differences, we have different specialisms, we have different areas of expertise. You know, we really do need to support the news gatherers on the end, particularly in Gaza, who are doing a phenomenal job to get us this information, literally dying, and, you know, that needs to be really amplified within the press. The BBC, for instance, I mean, could employ local freelancers there. They could do things like that. There is options to, like, really encourage it. I mean, it's still going to be very risky, but they can generate news from that reason and get the truth out.
Well, that's the idea. Do you see an end to the conflict at all? I mean, this is using your crystal ball and a bit of analytical skills, but it doesn't seem to be finishing anytime soon.
No, I mean, like, my specialism's like very much like Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, that sort of stuff. So I don't know too much, like, about the kind of longness of that. But I mean, I do think that, like I said, the long arc of history lends toward justice, and I do think it will eventually sort of hopefully, I mean, you can't go on forever, and I think more solidarity and more international pressure will definitely push it towards that.
Hey, look, finally, right, we've just had a journalist here from LBC asking awkward questions of Israeli interviewees. Giving her cards, she's got the sack.
Yeah? Oh, is that true? Yeah. Is that true? Well, I think more power.
Do you think there's that sort of pressure going on?
As well, yeah. I'm of two minds about putting on the Israeli spy at this point, because they're obviously spouting disinformation. So, like, I mean, how much credibility? There was an old phrase I heard at the when I was at the BBC, Jeremy Paxman, I don't know if he's a Newsnight presenter, he used to say, I might be misquoting him, it might not have actually been him, but there was a quote going around attributed to him, was that there's no balance between a truth and a lie. So I think if you're actively lying, and I think it's a very difficult thing to see, because they've always got their immediate, like, I'm almost now to the point where I see their little PR spin points, and they're, like, waiting to push the news cycle on, give out their little, like, sound bites, and then hope that it will just pass. So I'm, like, almost like there needs to be a little bit more kind of almost labelling, warning, this is not, until, and also, like, maybe, like, not taking press conferences, you know, just verbatim, you know, until, and put really putting pressure to what to put them to allow international journalists access, and that I think would be really, like, we can't do this unless you give us international access.
Asa Winstanley, Electronic Intifada. I'm here to express solidarity with our colleagues in Gaza and in Palestine, killed by Israel.
So why do you think, it's quite obvious that the Israelis deliberately targeting journalists, why?
Because they don't want the truth to get out. Simple as that. The Palestinian journalists are doing the best job. You know, David Lammy, the foreign secretary, said that there's no journalists in Gaza. And in saying that, he's erasing Palestinian journalists who've been doing the best job. You know, at Electronic Intifada, we're an international website, you know, based in Chicago and around the world. You know, I'm here in London, some of my colleagues are elsewhere, but we rely on our colleagues in Gaza, you know, our freelancers in Gaza and in the West Bank to get out the truth from the ground of what's actually happening, and they do the best job. And so Israel's very aware of that, and so Israel targets them.
You are obviously charting all this, but what about evidence of war crimes? Because more and more of it's coming out. Do you think there is any kind of change in the way that this has been reported? People like Lammy, etc., making statements, actually criticising the Israelis for the first time.
Yeah, that's true, and I think that's a reflection of the strength of the protests on the street, and just the, like, the wider Palestine solidarity movement, that people have been putting pressure on their politicians to actually do something. They haven't done, you know, to actually stop. I mean, it's not just complicity. This British government is actively involved in the genocide through intelligence gathering, training of Israeli soldiers in Britain, you know, economic ties, and lots of different ways, you know, weapons and so forth. And so, you know, they still maintain that despite all the pressure. But the fact that they're at least pressured into doing lip service to saying something, like you said, like Lamy, shows kind of the strength of the movement. But it's not enough.
Do you think it's just, obviously, is it, I mean, cynical as just words? Is that it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, until they actually do something and stop their complicity, it's just words, yeah.
Okay, so obviously electronic intifada, but people are looking to try and find out what's going on. A lot of the mainstream press is obfuscating events. So where are good places, do you think? Where would you suggest?
The Electronic Intifada, obviously, Declassified UK have been doing some really good reporting, especially about the spy flights, the British involvement, and the pro-Israel lobby. There's Mondo Weiss in America. You know, in terms of print media, there's the Morning Star. You know, everyone forgets the Morning Star. That, you know, they do some good journalism. Off the top of my head, there's a few others. There's a good few others.
Okay, so politically, yeah. It's another question. Jeremy Corbyn has just sort of started this new party. He's very pro-Palestine. What do you make of his new venture?
That's a big question. I am writing an article about it right now, so go to electronicintifada.net and see my analysis there. Soon, out probably next week. But what I would say in a nutshell is, I mean, I wrote a book about how Jeremy Corbyn was attacked by the mainstream media and the Labour Party establishment and by the pro-Israel lobby, crucially. And that was the most successful way he was attacked. And it was very successful in destroying the movement that brought him to the leadership of the Labour Party. And so I would say, unless he fights back against those attacks, the anti-Semitism smears specifically, the idea that you know, the there's a massive anti-Semitism problem on the British left. Unless he can fight back against that effectively, I think the new party is not going to have much of a chance. You know, they have to go on the offensive on that. And you know, his colleague Zara Sultana has kind of intimated recently that she would like to do that, to go in a more go on the offensive more. So, you know, I think that's the only way they can win.
Well, it's all very well us pontificating here in London. We're not getting bombed. Yeah. Is there any hope, do you think, if, you know, if Palestinians are listening, and some do, you know, have you got any hope to offer them? Because, you know, all this is so far is mostly words, isn't it? Do you see an end in sight to this?
Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. Like, I can't really offer them any hope. Like, we can only keep doing what we're doing and keep reporting the truth and just we're with you. You know, our governments are against you, but we, the people, are with you. Independent media is with you, and we'll keep on reporting the truth.
Okay, Edwin Stanley, thanks very much for joining.
Yeah, no worries.
Mohsin Abbas is my name. I'm here because I'm going to show solidarity to all those journalists who are being killed on a daily basis. More journalists killed in this genocidal assault on Gaza than any other war that's been known, even more than the Second World War, as far as I know. Because
you're right, and the first put together, and the American War of Independence. More journalists killed this time.
Well, it's shocking because it shows that now there is absolutely no there's no red line. There are no conventions, Geneva or otherwise, that are valid when it comes to Israel, and nobody's stopping them. This is the other major issue. So the protest here outside Downing Street is really vital because it's time to shout for every one of the people who's being attacked, not just the kids, of course, that, you know, have been 100 a day being killed, or for the women, shall we count the women, which is an overwhelming majority. The Israelis have now admitted 83% of the people killed have been civilians. It's a lot more than that. That's a lie as well. The reality is that they've targeted mercilessly professionals of every kind. They've done scholasticide, genocide, infanticide, and mediacide, I guess now. That's what's going on. Yeah, they're killing more journalists.
Journocide.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's.
Anyway, why do you think it is in the Holy Land? It's amazing that this is happening now. I mean, you know, there's such more than if they go back 200 years, which is what we've got figures for. Suddenly, anyone that's reporting anything that they can get away with, the Israelis are now killing. This has never happened before in any war.
Because to shut out the truth, you need to stop the people who are getting the truth out. And those journalists have been the eyes and the ears of the Palestinians. Basically, without them, we'd hardly got any news. The reality is journalists are banned, international journalists are banned from going into Gaza. If the Israelis are so clean and not doing all this genocide, why aren't international journalists allowed in to report normally and fairly? What are they scared of? What are they hiding? Well, what they're hiding is exactly what you've been seeing across all the social media. So it's stupid of the Israelis to even stop the international journalists, because the fact is it's all getting out anyway. And the international media is looking really stupid because they're failing in their duty as well to hold Israel to account. They've not talked about the number of journalists that are being killed. It's shocking, it's disgusting, it's absolutely abhorrent, and it needs to stop.
Okay, so, yeah, but why Israel? Why Palestine? This is the epicentre of this killing that's unprecedented now.
Well, the thing is that Israel's issue is that it has an ideology at the heart of it. And the ideology originally was a secular Zionism, but now it's actually mutated into this kind of Jewish supremacist theological doctrine, dogma, which necessitates the killing of what they call Amalek, i.e. everybody who is not a Jew, everybody who's not an Israeli. Essentially, they are capable of killing anybody. That's what their scriptures, the way they've interpreted their scriptures or misinterpreted them. I'm not an expert on the Torah, I'm not an expert on the Talmud. But the reality is that these people, the Jewish religious fascists who are there in Israel, are basically validating every kind of attack through their religion. And that is an affront to Judaism, that's an affront to Jewish people, that's an affront to the Jewish religion and faith. They're conflating it, they're deliberately dragging other Jewish people into the maelstrom, and they're trying to incite a kind of anti-Semitism or a Jewish hatred, which is really dangerous, because this is the kind of thing that Hitler did, and they're doing it for free to their own so-called people. The same Benjamin Netanyahu, who says he's a Jew or a Zionist, is actually creating a global problem in which Jews are now becoming center stage in terms of people's ire. Now, that is really dangerous, and of course anybody who knows Judaism, those real Jewish people, sympathizes with those Jews who've been dragged into this. Those who don't know and have been mizzled into supporting the Israeli fascist apartheid state, well, they are at least hopefully also waking up to the danger, because as they say, the chicken will comes home to roost, basically. And if we're not careful, we're going to find the same kind of anti-Semitism that perhaps the Nazis, etc., kicked off as a propaganda campaign. But this time it's Benjamin Netanyahu and this global Zionist movement which is bringing the tribulations on the Jews. And we all need to prevent that.
Well, look, we're stood in Whitehall opposite Downing Street. It was Britain that had the Palestine mandate after the First World War. Some would say the British were given a very bloody nose by the Zionist terrorists in the late 1940s. Others, the British have been complicit in this. And I think it's fair to say, with the genocide, the British government has been complicit. Where do you stand on how responsible the people across the road over the decades have been for what's going on right now?
The British establishment is completely responsible, without a doubt, because the people, the British people, had nothing to do with this, as usual. The situation was something that was engineered by the establishment in order to create, basically, the maintenance of a colony. The colonialist British attitude, the imperialist British continuation, is there, is still there. Israel is the only country in the world which is openly executing colonialism live as we see it, and we see the result of that. It's the same kind of genocides which, say, the British oversaw within the famine, for instance, in Bengal, or other famines that they oversaw. The same kind of things that the people, the Belgians, did in the Congo, or other European colonialists. What we're seeing Israel is doing is imitating exactly what they did. So we've still got colonialism alive and well, and this is why we need to oppose Israel. We need to change we need to outlaw Zionism. We need to dismantle Israel, and we need to have a sane, democratic, sensible state brought about with the Palestinians' own, their own sovereignty, with their own empowerment to bring about a peace settlement in that region. And it can't be imposed by them by anybody from the outside, and certainly they can't coexist with Zionism or coexist with Israel as it stands today.
I know you're quite busy online and elsewhere. Whereabouts can people find and follow your work?
Well, I'm most visible on the Deep Dive Perspective podcast. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram. Anyway, if you look for Deep Dive Perspective podcast, we'll be there.
Mohsin Abbas, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Cheers.